And welcome back to the NAGB's Blank Canvas, a show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm your host for this evening. And we're here on 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that you can download the Guardian Radio app from the App Store or Play Store, so you can have Guardian Radio all day on your phone. Or if you're a little bit more old school like me, then you can just like listen to us in your car. Or you can go to your desktop and go to www.guardiantalkradio.com and hit the live stream button. And then also, if you missed part of the show or you just thought it was great and you want to listen to it again or share it with a friend, you can go to the NAGB's website, which is www.nagb.org.bs, and you can go to Adult and Public Programs under the Learn menu and find Blank Canvas, and you can listen to all of the archive shows. And there is like many, many years of archive shows. So there's a lot of really interesting material in there. So, you know, if you're bored one night, go tune into Blank Canvas, even outside of Wednesday evenings at 6:30. So we're here tonight on our usual Wednesday slot with Gio Swaby, who is a Bahamian. I probably shouldn't say young anymore. I mean, you're still young, but you know, you're not like one of those like up and comers, fresh out of UV.
No, I'm not that young. I'm not that young, but I'm still young. I'm still a miss, you know.
Like, yeah, Well, listen, when you're my age, everyone's young, but I'm just saying like you've matured, like, you know, you're like a, as far as being an artist goes, I wouldn't call you a young artist anymore. I guess, mm-hmm. Because you really like learned some, you know, you've learned and you've developed and you've kind of matured. And of course, you're still going to evolve as your practice kind of continues. But I think it's been really enjoyable for a lot of us over the last decade that I've known you, watching the kind of changes that the practice has gone through and where it's come to. So before the break, we were talking about Basil Kincaid's little post about how hard you got to work to be an artist. So I do agree with you in that we shouldn't like, I think I grew up at a time where it was definitely like the harder you worked was, you know, a badge of honor, and like the more tired you were and how many phones you had and how many flights you'd taken. And it was kind of, and I think we've kind of come to an age where we've all realized that we maybe don't have to work ourselves to death, and maybe we can still find some kind of balance with our families and with you know. And so I agree with that part, that I think, you know, you don't want to work like necessarily 18 hours a day, but I do think, I would say it's not a 9-to-5. I would say that any part of the art market is not a 9-to-5. I think because it's a passion. So even in your spare time, you are actually engaging in art because you love it. So, you know, when I was in New York, I mean, I was ostensibly on a family vacation, but I would say the first days I was actually working, but then the days the family came, we still went to museums. We still went to galleries. And there were times that, you know, somebody would come out and I'd chat with them, and that was work. That moment was work, but I was going to the gallery because I actually want to see work and I want to see what's happening. So this kind of, and that makes it difficult because you sort of don't know when you're switching off and when you're actually, but I think it is something that is driven by passion. And so it's hard to be like, oh, well, it's 5 o'clock. I'm not going to that opening, or I'm not going to go support that artist at their first ever show at a space. And so, you know, you have to, I think, accept that if you're really going to be committed in the art world, there will be after hours things which aren't really work, but kind of are.
Yeah. I have a couple of things to say. Like, you hit on some pretty good points there that, yeah, working and being an artist as well, it's not a 9-to-5. It's not regular hours. It's almost impossible sometimes to plan how your day is going to go or when really things will end. But I guess I'd like to say the most important thing is that rest has to be intentional. That has to be something that we do with intention, instead of making it something that just occurs naturally, because it doesn't. And then, especially like you said, in jobs where the cutoff is not necessarily, or more so in careers when the cutoff is not necessarily obvious, it's important to kind of make that time for yourself. I think for me, over the last few years, I've went through a lot of changes in how I think about my life, how I think about rest and joy and finding that for myself, because last summer, my mother passed away. And then in 2016, my father passed away. And the way that they, like, I learned so much. It was obviously incredibly painful for me to go through, and it was a difficult time. And I think back on it and how it really changed how I reflect on my life. Because when my dad got really sick, he had cancer. And when he got really sick, he kept saying, like, I got to live my life. Like, I don't really have any... He said that he felt more comfortable because he was able to do a lot of the things in his life that he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And he really kind of lived by that principle. It was obvious. So I took a lot from him in that your life should be...
Like at the end of your life, you should have a list of things that you meant to do and you never got around to.
Right. Or yeah. more so yeah. too, like in your day to day, you should yeah. be able to enjoy your life. Your yeah. life shouldn't be something that feels 100% exhausting or yeah. overwhelming. Yeah. You should be able to have like moments of joy for yourself.
Definitely.
But I think do some things that you want to.
I agree 100%. But I think you said something really interesting, which is intentional. And mm-hmm. I think something that we're prone to do as humans, no matter what career we're in, is that we forget often to actually step back and look at what we have in a way. So like, for example, like we live here, we live in this amazing place, right? And it's very easy, or like we, the Bahamians do, because you're not here anymore, which is crazy, but that's fine. Because we've got the ocean, man. But you know, like when you're working really hard, you forget that you have that in a way. You're just like, oh, the traffic, oh, the potholes, oh, the, you know, and you're literally not seeing the beach you're driving by. You're literally not seeing the Coxsone where you could just stop for 15 minutes, just 15 minutes and have that moment of, so those are things that I'm personally, again, trying to do now is that, you know, and I said to my family, I was like, listen, at least once a month, we have to go to the beach. Like, we just have to, we live here and people fly. This is the end of the movie for a lot of people, you know, that they finally make it to this amazing space. And so let's make the most of it. And obviously that's easier to say because we live in this amazing place. But I think in your life, you can create moments for yourself. You don't have to grab your coffee at Starbucks in your tennis shoes and go out in the rain and go straight to the desk. You could actually sit in one of those comfy chairs in Starbucks for just 10 minutes and just think about your coffee and just sit and drink your coffee. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be like that you're in the beautiful Bahamas, but I think you have to learn to take moments in your day and in your week that you might just rush through or not even realize that that's a moment you could actually enjoy. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to be intentional about finding those moments too, because it's so easy to go from one point to the next and just be like, oh my God, I've got a meeting. I've got an opening. I've got a thing. I've got to call Gio. I've got a, you know, I've got this list to do.
Absolutely. And I definitely, like, I do relate to that. That's not to negate the issues that we grapple with as a country, which are numerous. Like, for me, a lot of what I have learned about expressing gratitude too is also toward people in my life. It's easy to kind of like think that people know that you appreciate them. But it's important to say. And that's something that I've changed a lot to being able to like verbally or just express gratitude in some way to people and to kind of make those connections and have those moments when, you know, while we still have the time to do that.
It's so true. And I think very often, I think we take a lot for granted in our lives, just generally. You know, like that we're like you said, I mean, we know what's happening around us and how much suffering there is as well, and how many problems there are that you know, that we wake up, that we're healthy, that we have our bodies, that we have people that care for us. And it's easy to forget to thank people or thank your colleagues, you know, for a job well done or whatever it is. And it is amazing how those few words of encouragement can really mean something, you know, to also the most unlikely people. I think we tend to think like that person doesn't need it. But I think everyone does, right? Everyone's human and everyone needs to hear like, oh, good job, or thank you, or, you know, something. So it's really true. Yeah,
absolutely.
And has, I don't want to get like too much into your personal life, but what about Stephen?
You mean like being able to...
How's it been for him? Just like following, you know, again, like the transition, has he been able to also like, again, you know, grow as much, do you feel like with all of the the madness going on around and living away from home and moving from place to place? Has it been, I mean, it must have been quite nice. I know I've been so grateful to have, you know, my partner in life to like move with me, travel with me, counsel me. Do you feel like that's something that's like helped you get through really in a way too, is having Stephen there?
Oh, absolutely. Like that is such a major part of it for me. I'm so lucky in that we are so aligned and where our lives, where we see kind of our lives going and the major parts of our lives. And we really support one another. Like there's no ego between us. It's all about like, what do you want to do and how can I help you do that? And that's been like, I feel like if, Stephen is the person I can call when I just like have no idea what I'm doing or if I'm like, because he knows me so well. He knows even when I'm not talking what I kind of need.
And that's a sign of a very good partner.
I appreciate that. Yeah, or even just a reminder to eat, drink water. Like I get very in studio mode when I'm in the studio and I'm like, oh wait, I didn't eat today.
He keeps me on track. Yeah, I do that too.
It's easy.
It's good having a partner like that, but sometimes it's got its downside, and the fact that like now after 20 years, I don't have to say anything and my husband knows exactly what I'm thinking. So even when I'm trying to like not say something like mean, he just can see it in my eyes. And he's like, no, really? And I'm like, I didn't say anything. And he's like, but I know what you were thinking. And I was like, oh no, busted.
Yeah. Oh my God. He's like, I saw your eyebrows. I know what you were thinking. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, you're doing that thing with your mouth. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, double-edged sword, that one.
Exactly.
It works out well most of the time.
It does. So now you've moved to Toronto. You were in, you were on the West Coast. Now you're on the East Coast. What prompted that decision to move again? Because, I mean, you had to move from the Bahamas up to Canada is one big move. And then you got settled kind of where you were. And then you moved again. So what was that? What motivated that decision? And are you happy with that so far?
Oh, I'm super happy with it. I guess one of the big things was just like, I want to see what another part of Canada is like. Like before Vancouver, I only lived in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to like explore right now when like it felt easier for me to be able to do that without completely having to uproot everything or other people in my life. Mm-hmm. And also being closer to home. Like I was just, when I first moved like to Vancouver, I was like, oh, I'm going to be like I'm going off on my own adventure. And then after a while, I was like, man, this takes long to get home.
Yeah, that's a
like,
long
it's like flight, a full yeah. day of flying. And I was like, I just want to be able to get home quicker and be able to like easily spend time with my family. Maybe, you know, obviously pandemic has unfortunately prevented that in some ways, but things are starting to, you know, change a little bit here in Canada. And I'm excited to be able to use that proximity now to just come home.
Yeah. And I think also, I don't know much about the Vancouver art world, which, you know, so I might be speaking out of turn to say it's not as active as the Toronto art scene, but maybe that I don't know anything about it. Because I know there's a bit going on there, but it seems like Toronto's got like institutions and the people know and a lot of curators live there and there's like quite a lot of contemporary galleries.
I would say that Vancouver is pretty active. It's a smaller scene than Toronto, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm also not super familiar with the Toronto scene yet since I am still pretty new to the city, but it was pretty active. I guess I just felt a lot of times that I didn't fit in to a lot of spaces. Like I had some really great connections with some wonderful curators there, like Naya Lewis, who gave me some of my first opportunities, as well as Unit Pit, where I had my very first solo show back in 2017 with Jamie Ward as the who really was the head curator and helped me to achieve that. But I guess past those couple of things, I had a hard time just like getting my footing, and most of my work was shown elsewhere the entire mm-hmm. time I was living there. So mm-hmm. I guess Toronto feels a lot more like there's a lot of Caribbean culture here too. Like yeah. I could actually run into a Bahamian by accident here, which I have. Yeah. It's so nice. So I love that. I do feel more at home in Toronto.
Yeah, I think it's why my kids like it too. I think Toronto's just got more of a kind of multicultural flair. So I can imagine that they've got a great art scene, but that maybe it's quite kind of regional and quite, I don't want to say provincial because that makes it sound backwards somehow, but specific to its space. Whereas I feel like Toronto's got kind of like a broader palette somehow. Anyway, mm-hmm. we're here talking to Jovana Swaby, a Bahamian artist who moved up to Canada really quite some time ago, 8 years ago?
I think
it's seven, eight years.
Yeah.
And just recently moved to Toronto. She's got her BFA out there in Vancouver and is now getting her MFA in Toronto. But in the meantime, has had an explosion in her career. Just came off a really successful solo show in New York at Claire Oliver Gallery, and we'll speak a little bit more about that after the break. You're here listening to the NEGB's Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. You're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.